This is another big one.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. It's the fifth largest bankruptcy in U.S. history. CIT Group filed yesterday. The bank matters a whole lot to hundreds of thousands of companies that use the bank as a primary cash source. It's a business bank. Marketplace's Mark Mitchell Hartman is with us live this morning to talk about what the bankruptcy means. Good morning, Mitchell.
Good morning.
So CIT is a huge lender to small and mid-sized businesses. How does this affect them?
Well, this is a prepackaged bankruptcy. The goal is that the company will be back on its feet, reorganized by the end of December. CIT got in trouble with huge losses on subprime mortgages and bad student loans. Early this year, it turned itself officially into a bank. That was so that it could tap into the Troubled Asset Relief Program. It's been negotiating with bondholders, and the good news here is that CIT can probably keep its lines of credit and inventory financing going without too much of a hitch. That's a big deal as we're trying to come out of a recession. CIT is particularly important to manufacturers and retailers, where it forward pays vendors so that they can get stuff to stores. We asked business analyst Peter Cohan about the impact of CIT's bankruptcy.
In the case of CIT failing, I don't think it's going to have a catastrophic effect. In fact, what they're doing is having a prepackaged bankruptcy, which has the effect of allowing it to continue to operate, continue to lend to its roughly million customers like Dunkin' Donuts and franchises and just small and medium-sized businesses, because it's going to be getting financing from the likes of Carl Icahn to continue to operate.
Mitchell, who are the losers in all this?
Well, first off, the American taxpayer, we put $2.3 billion in bank bailout money into CIT at the end of the Bush administration. We're not likely to see a dime of that, and nor will CIT's shareholders.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman joining us this morning. Mitchell, thanks.
Thanks.
Stocks are pretty tepid as we start off the new month. Markets are lower in Europe, mostly lower, but the German DAX is flat and shares in Paris and London are slightly higher right now. Asian shares closed mostly lower today, the exception China, where its benchmark rose about 3%. If October means fall, then Wall Street went right along with it. The S&P and NASDAQ had losses for the month. The Dow tanked Friday by 250 points. We're set to get a bunch of economic indicators this week, among them October auto sales figures that come out tomorrow. And for the first time in a long time, one company is expected to make a decent showing. And analysts are predicting General Motors will have some excellent numbers when it reports. Alisa Roth checks it out.
Let's get one thing straight. Nobody's suggesting this is going to be a banner month for auto sales. Robert Schultz follows the auto industry at Standard & Poor's.
So we're still expecting the year to be significantly below last year.
He guesses total sales for the year will be around 10.2 million. They were 13.2 million last year. He says the market's probably already going back up, but car companies are still having a hard time of it. Or most of them are, anyway. Jeff Schuster is in charge of forecasting at J.D. Power.
It's a very strong month for GM.
He says GM's sales numbers are up more than anybody else's, and it's beating its own numbers, too. It looks like it sold more cars this October than last, and that's the first time that's happened in almost 2 years.
They're seeing a strong response to their marketing programs that are out there, primarily on the truck side.
Schuster says GM's smaller cars have also sold well. Now, he says 1 month isn't a trend yet, but he thinks this month's numbers are a good sign for GM. I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world and the connections between them. The Economist, on newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com. And by Nova, Becoming Human on PBS, the evolution of evolution. Nova, Becoming Human, Tuesday at 8, 7 Central on PBS.
Remember when bonuses were all about a modest reward for hard work and energy? Not anymore, at least on Wall Street, where making millions is par for the course. It's been a sour point for the majority of those who don't work on Wall Street. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan's been taking note of this big gap at Wall Street and Main Street. He joins us now. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
You know, I'm curious about this because we know how the bonus system works on Wall Street and all that, but how did these bonuses get to be millions upon millions of dollars?
Well, it's a formula. Now, a million years ago, when Wall Street was private and people wanted to keep their fixed costs down, you worked for basically survival wages And then you got a piece of the action afterwards. Now that most of these companies are stockholder-owned, they have a bonus. And on Wall Street, bonus does not mean what it means in the real world.
So what's the difference then?
In most of the real world, a bonus is something for extraordinary effort and extraordinary accomplishment. And it's a bonus. On Wall Street, it's generally part of your base pay. They just call it a bonus for historical reasons. And the word bonus itself is complicating the relationships because Wall Street guys feel entitled because they consider it compensation. And people on Main Street who don't know this world, no reason they should, think it's outrageous because what have these people done other than take government bailout money?
But it still feels like there's this tension here. I mean, what should we do about these bonuses? Should we call them something else?
First, we should call them something else, but I was an English major and I actually care about words. On Wall Street, they care about money, so that's why they don't call it something else.
Yeah.
Second, at least this year, the real heavy hitters in these firms ought to be smart and take nothing in the way of bonuses and say, we got so much money from the government and we have benefited so much that the money we would normally pay as bonuses, we're paying to the U.S. Treasury. Now, I think there are two chances of that happening, slim and none, but I think that's what I would do if I ran a Wall Street firm. Then again, that's probably why I'll never run one.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan with us this morning. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
And finally, the court case is anything but mellow. Mellow Beverage is suing a company called Beverage Concepts, charging trademark infringement, and claims Beverage Concepts is using slogans such as Mellow, Be Happy, and Drink Mellow. Mellow Beverage says it was the first with Mellow brand relaxation and sleep aid drinks. The case is being heard in Las Vegas courts. Not sure if the judge told the ambitious lawyers to chill out. From Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.